everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of It's Easy, Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. And I'll tell you, I've been away for about a couple of weeks. My responsibilities at work and some other things that I had to take care of really captured my time. And I just had to step away for a minute. But you know what? Coming back, I'm coming back strong. I'm coming back with a brother that I met and have a tremendous amount of respect for. A gentleman that I first met when I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Park Church, and got to know him a little bit better when Bishop Claude Alexander asked both of us to serve on the board of directors for Park Property Management. And, you know, I used to watch this young brother, man. He comes in and walks into the room and he commands this presence. And I'm like, who's this young dude? I mean, I see him in church, but, you know, if Bishop asked him to be on his board, he must be somebody. So as I get to sit there and watch him, I listen to his conversations, his input to the board. And as Bishop, you know, led, just to see him fit in and bring his ideas and thoughts to bear, I said, this brother is going somewhere. And sure enough, he has not only exceeded my expectations, but I tell you this much, the good Lord has his hand on him. And I can see it every day when he does what he do. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome to the podcast this week, my good brother, Mr. James Scruggs. James, how you doing, brother?
Incredible, Gerald, man. Doing great, man. Thank you so much, man. I just wanted to start out and say I'm truly honored, blessed, and privileged for you to thought of a little old me to be on this amazing podcast. I mean, you have some heavy hitters on here, bro, and I don't take this opportunity lightly. And I really want to start out by saying thank you for allowing me to be a part of your vision.
Oh man, listen, you my brother, when we get through today, people are going to see just how God works and how when a life is blessed and you're obedient, things happen. So we're going to jump right in. Like all my guests, no preset questions, just an open-ended question to start. Tell us, who is James Scruggs and what's his early years like, his family, his background? What grounded him for who we see today and the things that you do?
Oh, man, great question. I mean, so who is James Scruggs? So I grew up in Riverhead, New York, and you know, as I look back over my life, you know, I truly give credit to my mother. I didn't realize it when I was growing up as a kid. But I mean, when I tell you, Gerald, she kept me in church and she had me in, you know, I was on the junior usher board, the junior deacons. I was on the youth ministry. I was on the youth choir. I mean, she had me involved in everything. And at the time, I just really couldn't understand why my mom had me in church so much. But as I grow up, I get it now. And I mean, you know, having me in church was much better than having me in the streets. Mm. And I thank her for that. I mean, you know, I never forget, I don't know how old I was. I was maybe like, you know, 5 years old and 6 and 7 years old. And I used to always see my pastor, who is in heaven now, Reverend McElroy, you know, every week as a kid, you know, every Sunday he would have somebody go up to church and give a tithing testimony. And he always would go up there and say, you know, so-and-so come up and give a testimony. And they'd be like, you know, they'd go up there and they'd give their tithing testimony. And as a kid, I was always like, man, they just doing this because Reverend McElroy asked him to do it, right? Go up there and give a tithing testimony, right? Try God, why God was so great for me and what tithing has done for me and blah, 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 blah. So as a kid, I just thought that they just did that because he asked him to go and do it. And, you know, 7, 8 years old, my mom would give me $1 or $2 to put in the offering table, or she would give me $1 or $2 to put in my tithing envelope. And I didn't get it as a kid, right? I really didn't get it, right? So, you know, I saw the seeds at a young age that my mom was putting in me. I didn't get it, but I totally see the seeds now. So I grew up in the church, Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, back in Riverhead, New York. I grew up with my mom and dad. I was one of these kids who I wouldn't say I grew up in the projects. I definitely didn't grow up in the projects, but you know, I didn't come from money either, right? So, you know, to put it in perspective, man, my mom and dad probably made $40,000 combined, right? living in New York, which, you know, living in New York, especially Long Island, that's not a lot of money, right? So, so grew up in the church, didn't come from, you know, a big home, grew up in an 800 square foot home, Riverhead. My mom and dad was together, but my mom was an integral part of my life. Like, she was the ones that would come to my football games, right? She was the ones that would come to anything that I did in school, right? She was the one that would take me to Jamaica Avenue every year and make sure I had nice clothes so the kids won't laugh at me. So, you know, my mom, Frances Scruggs, who I love to death, and she's here, still here with me today, and she shaped me to who I am. So, you know, I graduated from Riverhead in 1995 high school. From there, I went to the University of Virginia. I'll never forget this story, man. I'll just tell you the story because it kind of tells you who I am. So hopefully I won't take too long to answer that question, but I want to paint the picture. So,
Go ahead, my brother.
I graduated from Riverhead in 95, started UVA in 95, and fell in love with the school. You know, being from New York and going to the South, everybody's friendly. The campus was beautiful. The people was beautiful. Everything was beautiful about University of Virginia. And I'll never forget, you know, after my first semester, my mom calls me up and she said, I got bad news. And I said, what are you talking about, mom? And she was like, you got to come home. I said, come home? I said, I'm doing great in school, right? I was a psych pre-med major. I was doing well my first semester. She's like, we just can't afford it anymore. And Gerald, I cry like a baby. And I said, all right, Lord. I said, I cannot go back to New York. And she's like, well, look, you got a full ride to SUNY Binghamton. She was like, you know, won't you come back home and go to the state school and you don't have to pay for school. But I fell in love with UVA and the person who I am, I said, all right, Lord, what do I need to do? And I'm gonna put my faith in this in you and I'm gonna try to figure it out. And what I did was I went to my dean of students or career fairs and I said, all right, what do I need to do to become in-state? And I said, my godfather lives in Charlottesville. I said, you know, I can move in with him, use his address, blah, blah, blah. And he basically said, James, he's like, look, it's not that easy. He said, if everybody can just get a Virginia driver's license and use a Virginia residence, everybody would do it, right? Mm-hmm. He said, the only way that you can become a true in-state student is by taking a year off. So that's what I had to do.
Wow.
So that really hurt, right? But I had to do what I had to do. So I finished my first year at UVA. I lived off campus with three of my friends from that I met my first year at UVA. And I worked at this place called Circuit City. And I worked I was 18 years old, maybe going on 19, Gerald. And I worked in the ACE department and I was selling Walkmans, TVs, right? and bro, like, God get the glory. I don't take any credit for anything I'm about to tell you. But, you know, that year I made $50,000 selling Walkmans, telephones, right? CD players, right? And I just had this hustle, you know, mentality about me. And I was like, all right, like, I got to go get it, right? Like, I can't go back home. I don't want to go back home. I could go back home, but I don't want to go back home. I want to finish my degree here at UVA. So I worked that year at Circuit City, made $50,000, which for me was a whole lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
You know, I told you it is, right? My parents made $40,000 combined and I made $50,000 that year. So, you know, and to make a long story short, I worked that year. I came back to UVA the next year. So I went from paying $20,000 a year to paying $4,000 a year because now I have in-state tuition, right?
Yeah.
I did that while I was there. I saved up the $50,000. I became a RA and that got me free room and board, right?
Yeah.
So I went from, you know, paying 20 G's to $4,000, right? Free room and board. And the only thing I had to cover at that point is my $4,000. I saved money. And I graduated from the University from Virginia 4 years later, right? Or 3 years later. So graduated in 2000. But what that experience did was it taught me a lot, right? It showed me, you know, what to do when obstacles come your way, right? Mm-hmm. I could have took the easy way out. I could have listened to my mom. I could have came back home and went to SUNY Binghamton and got a full ride there, and it could have finished it out there. But that I knew that wasn't the path that God had for me. So I took a harder journey, a longer journey. But in 2000, I graduated from the University of Virginia.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Well, you know what? Two things I want to do. I want to pull you back a little bit to the earlier part. You said something that got my ears perked up. You said you were on the youth choir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So what was a tenor?
Yeah, tenor. Yeah.
Okay. First or second tenor?
I was a second tenor.
All right. All right. Yeah. That's number one. That's number one. All right. Let's get that out the way. I'm going to make sure Bishop Alexander sees this because. but on a serious note, though, if you go back to your formative years, it's obvious to me now, just listening to you share that part, that your mom is influential in your life from obviously from birth, obviously. But her influence, church, the grounding and everything else. Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a sister who's 10 years older. So she's 10 years older than me. So we grew up obviously in the same household, but being 10 years apart, we weren't super close.
Yeah.
Growing up. But she moved to Charlotte, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years after I moved to Charlotte, and we became a lot closer.
Yeah. But here's the thing I'm going to ask you now. What you just shared really shows a tenacity around going for what is yours. Mm. Where did that start? What about grade school, high school, middle school? Where did that start? Where did that hunger for, you know what, I got to go get it? Yeah, mom's influence was there, but when did that light bulb go off, you think?
So it's so crazy that you asked this question because, oh man, wow. Thank you for asking this question because it made me realize this. Like, so remember when I told you that growing up, me and my dad like lived in the same household, but me and my dad wasn't that close, right? We're much closer now, right? But my dad was the dad who, I don't know if it was tough love, I don't know what it was, but my dad was the dad who would never say, I love you, son, which I could never just understand that as a kid, right? And my dad was the one who always, you know, he'll say, hey, I want you to go cut the grass. So then I go cut the grass and he would have something to say about the way I cut the grass. Or, you know, my dad would make these comments like, you know, to me that was, you know, kind of like negative comments. And you might think it's crazy, but like the way my dad treated me in a way, right, it kind of fueled me, right? Because it was almost like, I'm going to show you, right? Like, I'm going to make it, right? Like, my dad was always kind of like negative, right? Like, you know, he didn't think that, I mean, and he's proud of me now. Lord knows he's proud of me now. But when I was a kid and a teenager, like, you know, like he would say things to me that would make me think like he didn't think I was going to amount to anything, right? Right. And my whole thing was like, I'm going to show you better than I could tell you kind of thing. So that fuel, I honestly didn't notice growing up, right? But you know how you look back over your life and you realize certain things, but it fueled me from my dad, right? Because I wanted to prove him wrong, right? So not only did I want to prove him wrong, but I wanted more for my life than they had, right? And then the goal for me was to have more than what my parents had. So I think it was a combination of, you know, me trying to prove my dad wrong and me wanting more for my life.
Mm-hmm. And that, did that carry you all the way through, you know, middle school, high school? So by the time you got your UVA, I mean, that's not a slouch of a school to get into and matriculate at. So academically, obviously you were probably on top of your game there, right?
So another great question, because I never forget this story. So I really wasn't, you know, I had great grades and it wasn't till the seventh grade when the light bulb went off for me. Mm-hmm. And I never forget my best friend. He was a white guy and he was taking advanced science. Right. And I'm like, man, you in advanced science? Like, what's this? Right. I didn't even know what advanced science was. Right. Why are you in advanced science? And I'm not in advanced science. And I never forget. I went to the science teacher and I said, I want to be in this class. And he was like, well, you're not registered for this class, right? And I was like, well, I want to be in this class. And he took a shot on me, bro. And he's like, all right, I'm gonna let you try this class out for 2 weeks. And he said, we're going to give it a go. And when I tell you, Gerald, I went into that advanced science class and I did well. And the light bulb went off for me. And I was like, okay, well, like, I don't need to be like where everybody else is. I want more for my life, right? And it started from school, right? So from there, man, I was taking advanced science, advanced math, everything. And that's when the light bulb went off for me, because I was like, man, I'm like, I want more, right? I want to, right. And I realized, I was like, all right, man, I can make this happen. I could do this. So in the seventh grade is when the light bulb, I mean, I was the kid who, you know, up until that point, I was just doing enough, right? Mm-hmm. But in the seventh grade, man, is when the light bulb went off for me. And then that's when I started taking AB classes, focusing, and school became a top priority to me.
Yeah. What about sports? You said you played football. What was that like?
So I played football, but I wasn't I would never sit here and tell you I was an athlete, right? A great athlete. Like, I was a big kid. I was always big. My nickname was Bubba, right? So I was 280 pounds in high school, right? In middle school, I was a big kid. So I always was a big kid growing up. But it was fun. I mean, that's where, you know, I was able to build great relationships with friends, right? And have a great time. And it was another way to keep me grounded and keep me out of the streets, right? So between sports, church, and school, right, that helped me, you know, stay grounded.
So you grounded. So you have a solid foundation, and you matriculated at UVA. Mm-hmm. And so what happened after UVA, and what continued to drive you? Because what you're doing now, my brother, is, I tell you, it's impressive. It's impressive. So UVA ends, and what's next?
So UVA ends, right? And when I was at UVA, I thought I was going to be a doctor because I love kids, right? But after taking that year off, I decided I didn't want to go and be a pediatrician anymore. And at the time, this was back in the 90s, investment banking and sales and trading was the hot thing for everybody to do. So one of my fraternity brothers was like, man, you know, you should look into investment banking. And then I realized I didn't want to work 80 to 100 hours. So I heard about sales and trading. So make a long story short, I ended up doing a lot of research on sales and trading. And I got my first job with Bank of America in 2000. So I started my career at Bank of America as an associate. I moved to Charlotte in 2000 and I worked on the trading floor. And I never forget, man. And for me, I just put it all out there. Like I was making $50,000. So again, that was a lot of money for me. And then my first year at B of A, Gerald, I got my bonus, which was $30,000, which was a whole lot of money for me. Mm-hmm. And I never forget, I put it in the stock market. I was like, man, I'm excited. I'm gonna put this money in the stock market. I want to invest. I want to grow. I want to become wealthy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sure enough, I lost every penny that I put in there. I was putting
the whole 30.
The whole 30. I was buying. Wow. I was buying telecom stocks. Right.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was buying telecom stocks, and I was buying Enron and CIT and all the WorldCom and I lost everything. And I never forget, man, at this point in my life, I was wrestling with tithing, right? Right. At that point, I was wrestling with tithing, right? And I never tithed other than a dollar or two. So I'm painting a picture, right? So I never tithed other than a dollar or two that my mom would give me when I was a little kid, right?
Right.
And I never forget, I had an 86 Buick LeSabre. Right. And I was making $50,000 working for B of A. And I was like, man, I want a new car. I was like, you know, I said, man, like, it would be nice to get a new car. And then, but God was he was just tugging on me about tithing. And I was like, man, if I tithe, man, that's about $500. That's $500, you know, a month or whatever, right? Whatever it was, right? And I was like, man, should I tithe? And then eventually, man, God just convicted me. Yes, tithe. And bro, so I tithe, and I decided to tithe, and I never forget. So then once he convicted me to tithe, I was like, all right, do I do gross or net? So then I was seriously, right? I'm like, all right, Lord, so am I supposed to tithe gross? Am I supposed to tithe net? So then I got some wise counsel on that, figured that out. And bro, so I started tithing. And man, that's a whole nother story right there. But to paint the picture, I started tithing. I lost that bonus. And then I never forget, I went to one of my fraternity brothers, his name was Doug Jones. And I said, man, what else? What other options is it, right? And he said, what about real estate? And I was like, I never thought about real estate. He's like, man, you should read this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Mm-hmm. So, brother, I read that book. And at the time, I wasn't even an avid reader, bro. But I could not put that book down. You hear me? Like, I just read that book. So So after reading that book, God gets the glory about what I'm about to say. I don't take no credit for it. But I went out literally, and in one year, I bought 20 rental properties. So the first year, I bought 20 rental properties. The second year, I bought 10 rental properties, right? And this was back in 2002, right? And then I never forget after that, I was working on the trading floor with a brother who went to Morehouse. And he was like, man, you ever thought about owning a REIT? And I was like, no, what? I didn't even know what a REIT was. He was like, a real estate investment trust. And he was like, what's your goal? I said, well, I eventually want to get to 100 single family homes and have them free and clear. And that brother was like, hey, if you do apartments, you can get there faster. So make a long story short, me and that brother went out and tried to buy a 35 unit apartment building. And we both were making, for what I thought, good money. We had great credits and we could not get the building. We could not get the apartment building. So a white guy I work with on the trading floor, he overheard the conversation and he's like, man, you know, if you guys looking for a third partner, he's like, I'll go into it with you. So make a long story short, we said, all right, fine. He got involved and then we were able to get the apartment building, right? So in 2005, he bought his 35 unit apartment building. Me, Chris, who was a brother from Morehouse, and then another brother, Todd, went to Morehouse. We decided to buy this 163 unit apartment building. So from 2002 to 2007, God being the glory, I don't take any credit for it. You know, I was able to amass 30 single family homes, 35 unit apartments with two partners in a 163 unit apartment building with four more partners.
Jesus, woo, man. So now I understand when you walked into the boardroom why that presence came with you. But seriously, and it's good to hear the Morehouse brothers, you know. I spent some time at Morehouse, as you might know, and I'll tell you something, the house and black males and what it instills in black males to go for excellence at all times, it's ingrained in them. So I'm actually pleased to hear you mention two Morehouse brothers, because I spent 19 months there and it's drilled into them that you are, like you said, you want more, right? But I want to ask you, what fraternity are you?
Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, yeah. Incorporated.
Yeah, Alpha. I was just up at Cornell, Ithaca last week, and I was looking for your new home that you guys bought up there.
Yep.
But let me ask you this question. You shared some very powerful stories just now, not only the stories of how you started, but you keep going back to your faith and you're saying, you know, the tithing and that you give God glory because you don't take any credit for it and all of these things. But, you know, this podcast is really about trying to inspire young people, young professionals, you know, folks still in college. Believe it or not, I hear more from grandma, those age groups. What would you say to young people that are listening to this now, or young professionals could be on that trading floor like you were when you were having that conversation? What would you say to them as guideposts for them to pursue?
Oh, man. I mean, that's a lot to unpack, but I mean, And I know a lot of people say this, but for me, it's been my living testimony, but truly to put God first. I mean, anything you decide to do, I mean, if it's being an entrepreneur, if it's being a civil engineer, whatever you decide to do, to truly put God first, I would say is the first one, right? And then, you know, find that great mentor, right? I mean, that is truly, you know, because finding someone who kind of went on a journey that you're trying to go on and they can, you know, tell you about some bumps in the roads that they may have hit that you can avoid is a blessing. So, you know, putting God first, finding the right mentor, building like intentional, genuine relationships is another, you know, and I would say, you know, networking is huge. Right. And doing research on whatever you decide to do. Right. So, I mean, you know, those are like, I mean, I can go on and on, and then don't get me started. If you just, you know, about, you know, marriage, right. And then finding that right partner, because honestly, bro, like finding that and being grounded in the in with the right spouse is major, you know, especially as an entrepreneur, because it's already hard in itself, right? But having that partner who can help you through those times is priceless.
Well, let's go there. Expound on that, what you mean, because today, you know, well, I've been married now for what, almost 28 years, been with my wife for about 30 to 31 years. Mm. So I know exactly what you're saying, but in the context of what you said, your comment, don't get me started, what's behind that?
I mean, I'll tell you, man. So when I first started my, so what's behind it is, when you are, you know, and this is for people who want to be an entrepreneur, right? So, you know, it's already hard in itself to take this leap of faith, right? No matter what the business idea is, right? But having somebody who truly supports you, right, is amazing. And I give you an example. So in 2008, we know we had the recession,
right?
And real estate market just kind of just went to where it went, right? And at that point in time, I left Bank of America in 2007, and I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I knew I did not want to go back and work for corporate America. So I met my wife now back in 2006. We got engaged in 2007, and we got married in 2008 in the recession. And I never forget, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I knew I didn't want to go back to corporate America. And I remember I said, honey, I said, I want to start this assisted living business. And she said, all right, I'll support you. Let's go. And my wife was an attorney, and, you know, I had some savings, right, when I started that business, but you got to remember, we in the recession now.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, man, like we were blessed. We was never at that time robbing Peter to pay Paul, but my wife felt like this angst, right, about like, you know, she's like, you know, because it took a year to get that business really going, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you spending money to make money, right? And even though in the beginning, my wife was like, yeah, let's do it, right? I got you. But over the time, after 2 or 3, 4 months, right, I can just tell she was feeling some kind of like angst about the business, right? And what was going on. And you gotta remember, bro, we paying all of our bills, we live a humble life, everything is good, right? But that angst that my wife was having was giving me angst, if that makes sense, right?
Because it does make sense, yes.
It's already hard enough to go out here and try to start something from scratch. But the fact that she was feeling some kind of angst, it was like really, and like I said, my wife is an amazing, right? She wasn't like coming home like, you need to go back to corporate America, none of that, right? But I could just tell she was feeling some kind of angst. So I never forget, bro. And it was making me feel anxious. And I went to her, I said, honey, I said, I'm gonna figure this out. I said, give me 1 year. I said, if I can't make Unlimited Possibilities take off in 1 year, I said, I'll go back to corporate America. Now, I was gonna make that promise to my wife if I couldn't make it work and go back to corporate America. But me being who I am, and I say this in a humble way, I was not going back to corporate America, right? So I knew I had to go out here and hustle. Now, what I told my wife, I said, look, you have to remember this. I said, because we got married in April 2008. I said, I'm gonna go out here and make this happen. But I said, but you gotta make sure you fully give me your 120% support. And I said, but you can't expect me to come home either at 5 o'clock for dinner. I said, because if I got to go get it, I got to go get it. And she said, absolutely. So for me, bro, as an entrepreneur, right, who's starting a brand new business, something I've never done before, when my wife said, okay, she said, okay, and she meant okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a weight off my shoulders, right? Because I didn't have to come always be thinking about how she's feeling. When she said, okay, you got that year, she let it all go. She gave it all to God. I gave it all to God. And we went out there and made it happen. So, but if I didn't have that support from her,
yeah,
I have no idea how much harder it would have been, who, you know, trying to figure out a new business, trying to make it work in a recession, But then not having that support from your spouse, oh brother, it would have been so hard. But when I tell you, and that's where it started, her support, and I've had it ever since. And it's been a major blessing to me as an entrepreneur.
Oh, wow. Do you know of brothers and sisters who are going down the entrepreneur's path but don't have that kind of support from a significant other? And do you see a difference?
Yes, definitely, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, right? And it can see a major difference, right? So, and that's why when, you know, one of the things for me that I want to be, and I have been real intentional about, is giving back to other young brothers who are younger than me. And I tell them, I say, look, one of the things that you got to get right, and I said, whether you're in a serious relationship right now or you're not in a serious relationship, but the day that you become in a serious relationship, the day that you decided that you're going to get married, you got to find that right partner. Because I said, it can make or break you being an entrepreneur. So I know brothers who are doing it, or who have been doing it, who haven't had that support. And I see the stress and the heartaches that they go through. And I'm trying to help brothers who haven't been there yet to make sure that they get it right.
they get it right. They don't get it right. Walk into that hornet's nest.
Yes, sir.
But if, just sitting here listening to you, and you know, you're an entrepreneur at heart, that is clear to me from our time we met until now. But if you could think of one thing, what distinguishes, is there anything, or is it a character trait that distinguishes someone who wants to be an entrepreneur versus someone who would rather just stay working and have that security of the paycheck coming in? And that, you know, I think the best word I could say is stability. Is there a character trait that you see, or is it just that, hey, man, I'm coming from New York, I got to go get it, I got this thing I want to prove my dad wrong, and all the things. Not everybody's going to have that early experience, but do you think there's a character trait that you can observe as a seasoned entrepreneur now that sets the two apart?
So that's a great question. I mean, honestly, so part of it is being a risk taker, right? Mm-hmm. So the brothers that I know a lot of smart brothers who has what I call the golden handcuffs on, right? Because they're making great money, right? And I guarantee you, I know these brothers, because I see it, right? That if they took that leap of faith and they were able to step out and take that risk, these brothers can go out here and crush whatever business that they decide to start, right?
Right.
So I think it starts from, you know, a risk tolerance, right? And right, so you know, having the right risk tolerance, right? Having the urge and the desire to step out of that and it's harder when you make more money, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So if you making $30,000, right, or but right, it's a lot easier to take that risk, right? But if you're making $300,000-$400,000, which I know brothers that's doing that, it's a lot harder to take that risk. Yeah. If that makes sense, right? So I mean, I think it comes to a risk, it comes to a faith, right? It's having that itch, right? That entrepreneur itch, is having that hustle mentality, right? You know, those are what I would contribute to, you know, someone who is saying, all right, I'd rather be safe, right, and work in a corporate America, right, and get my paycheck, right, versus saying, you know, I want to make my own destiny. I mean, and for me, it really comes back to being able to control my destiny. What I've learned from working in corporate America was that I couldn't control my own destiny, right?
Yeah,
I can only go so high, right? You know, I've made millions and millions of dollars for B of A, but I got 0.01% of that, right?
Right.
If that, right? And I knew if I take that same desire and hustle and work ethic for my own, what I can do, right? Not only what I can do for my family, leaving a legacy, but I can even give more back to the kingdom. And honestly, that's what I'm all about, is kingdom giving.
Right? Yeah, but it was funny. We were eventually going to end up here. So I think your new company is Kingdom Development
Partners. Yes, sir.
Partners. Yeah. So yes, talk to us a little bit about that. So you've just been in this space. So I consider you now a guru in real estate, especially there and what you're doing. But that kingdom development partners that you have now, that's just an offshoot or an outgrowth, or really an expansion of what you started when you met on the trading floor with those young men.
Exactly. So I started out doing real estate investing, right? Buying real estate, right? So it's like the game of Monopoly, right? So I started buying houses, and then you graduate a little bit, right? And I started buying multifamily apartments, right? But then, and then in 08, I started doing assisted living homes, right? But now with Kingdom Development Partners, so I have, you know, two new companies since that. And Kingdom Development Partners is a development firm. And then we also have a sister company, which is called JS Sons Construction. So what Kingdom Development Partners do, what we do is we go out, we find raw land, right? And then we figure out what the highest and best use is for that land, right? So currently to this day, we develop and we build single family homes. We develop and build multifamily townhomes, right? So, you know, as of today, we have several projects in the pipeline, and God gets the glory for all of this. But Kingdom Development Partners now has, we just finished phase one in this neighborhood, this African-American neighborhood called Wilmore, where we just developed and built eight multifamily townhomes. We're building 34 townhomes across the street. Another African-American neighborhood called Enderley Park in Charlotte. We're building 16 single family homes. We're building 34 multifamily townhomes in that neighborhood. And God be the glory, we have another piece of land that we own in North Charlotte, 23 and a half acres, where we're going to be building 330 apartments and 80 build for rent townhomes. So that's what we have in our existing pipeline right now to this day with Kingdom Development Partners.
That is awesome, man. I remember when you started and you were sharing your story, but to now, I left Charlotte in 2013. So you have really expanded. So how do, aside from God's providence and his blessings, how would you, if you had your druthers, let's say it that way, you had your druthers, the African-American community, young brothers, you say you're giving back. Mm-hmm. Do they see you as someone that they can be one day, or they just see you as an anomaly and say, hey, I'll never get there?
No, because if anybody's talked to me, I mean, they're going to have to see that they can be exactly what I am or better one day. I mean, and that's what I share with these brothers. I mean, you can be what I am plus more. So, I mean, the brothers that I mentor definitely see it. They see it and they desire to have what I'm doing plus more. So, I mean, definitely I think they see, that's what is the beauty about being an entrepreneur, is when you can either see and or help other brothers become what you are or more. And that's part of what the giving back is, and reaching back, and that's just one part of giving back to the kingdom, right? Is being super intentional about helping other brothers get to that same level or better. Yeah.
So what would you say is your ministry?
So my first ministry is my family. Mm-hmm. So it's so crazy because, oh man, another great question, because one thing that God spoke to me, he said, look, I don't want you to be that guy who goes out here and try to make millions and millions of dollars, but you do it by risking losing time with your kids, right? Mm-hmm. And when I tell you that, when he dropped that in my spirit, I can appreciate that so much, because my family is my first ministry. When I tell you, if you ask me what's more important, is it to become a self-made millionaire or to be an amazing dad and be a part of your kids' lives and watch every soccer game that you can watch every swim meet that you can watch, right? Take them on every father, dad, or father, son trip that you can take them on and instill into them, right? Help them, you know, be a part of a legacy. I mean, that that to me, and being a great husband, right? So, and it's all a job, right? And it's so crazy because I'm serious. Like being a full-time dad and a full-time husband is just as much time or more as being an entrepreneur, right? If you do it right, right? And that's my first ministry, honestly, is my family. I mean, because to me, if I don't take care of them first, none of this matters.
None of it matters. I'm going to ask you a very big hypothetical question. You just mentioned a lot of land and things that you're doing there in the city of Charlotte. And I've watched that city grow. I was at Johnson C. Smith, if you recall. And now we can see I call it gentrification. Mm-hmm. Uptown is coming further to Beatty's Ford Road and all these kinds of things. But there's still some challenges there. Correct. If you were mayor of Charlotte for a day or a week and you had all the power to make changes and things, what would you do?
Great question. So one of the things that we didn't talk about that Kingdom Development Partners will do and is working on and doing now is trying to bridge this generational gap, wealth gap amongst our people. So if I was the mayor, I would make every developer, white developer, black developer, Indian developer, Asian developer, every project that they do, a piece of it has to be affordable, right? Mm-hmm. Right? That's not a requirement right now. Right now, whether that comes down from the federal legislation or the local legislation, I would make that a priority because what I'm seeing now, especially now in Charlotte, that generational gap is getting wider and wider and wider, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Kingdom Development Partners is being intentional about is helping bridge that generational gap. And I'll tell you how. We're doing our first diverse price point. We signed on a dotted line prayerfully next week on a contract of some land on Beatty's Ford Road, where we're going to do our first, what I call a diverse price point or mixed income for sale community. And what that means is 70% will be market rate, 30% will be affordable, right? So, and this is not rent. This is for sale because, Gerald, when I tell you growing up from Long Island, coming from nothing, and I've seen what real estate has done for me in my life, that's one of the ways that we can help give back to the community and give back and help bridge this generational gap is helping people to truly become homeowners, right? Yep. Because that's where it starts, right?
Yeah,
that piece right there. So if I was the mayor for the day, I would wave my wand and I would really truly hone in on bridging this generational gap. And the housing affordability issue that we have, like truly, truly honing in on that.
I'm going to ask you a question. I'm pulling up on your expertise and your knowledge of real estate and homes and rent. Mm-hmm. And all this kind of stuff. Down here in Orlando, rents are through the roof. California, it's through the roof. But you have firms like BlackRock and others now who are buying up properties. And, you know, the gentrification is now on steroids, if you will. What is your take on that as an entrepreneur? And given what you just said about, I'm going to call it your ministry, to give back and bridge this gap. Over on this side, there's this huge business and this huge sense of driving wealth. But on this side, here comes the ministry part that's basically saying, look, I got to find ways for people to afford homes. How do you see those two? Because it looks like they're polar opposites, but who's trapped in the middle are low to middle income people who right now can't afford it. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
So, I mean, another great question. Because you are exactly right. So because of all of this private equity monies that's out there, they're the ones who are buying all of these properties, right? So the consumer who I'm talking about, right, who want to buy a home, even the consumers who aren't looking for affordable housing, it's hard for them to buy a house right now because all of that private equity money is buying everything that they can, right? So they're making it a lot harder for the consumer to be able to purchase a home because they're buying it before it even hits the market.
Yeah,
So it is a huge disparity right now because of all of this private equity money coming in, buying up all of these homes. And then you have the consumer over here who can even afford a market rate home. But then imagine the ones who are looking for the affordable ones, right? So,
and
that's the reason why I'm so excited about doing our first, what I call a diverse price point and mixed income communities, because the need is there. Because if more people don't be intentional about making that happen, it's going to make it, it's going to make that gap even wider. And what it's going to do is going to allow people not to even become homeowners, because it's just too much gobbling up and money on this side that's just eating it all up. So I mean, that's a great question, and it needs to be more developers that's going to be intentional about making sure that these people don't get missed.
Yeah, you know, this is a very inspirational interview here. This is going to be one of the good podcasts. I know the good ones, but what's next for James Scruggs? What's next for James Scruggs?
So what's next for James Scruggs is to keep doing everything. So James Scruggs right now does market rate deals, right? And then James Scruggs is working on his first diverse price point communities. So what's next for James Scruggs is to keep growing Kingdom Development Partners, keep growing JS Sons Construction. But I'm really want to become the guru of diverse price point communities. And what I mean by that is that it needs to be more intentionality on that. So what's next for James Scruggs is to go out here and making sure that I'm not just going out here and trying to just mass and build this huge company, right, and make all this money, right, and for me or my family, but to make sure that I go out here and be super intentional about bridging this generational gap. Like when I tell you I'm excited about this, because one, God put it on my spirit to do it, and two, I'm excited about it because the need is there. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not a small need, it's a huge need. So right now, man, over the last, I would say probably a year, I've been blessed and fortunate to meet certain different future partners that's going to come alongside of me, right, to help me figure this out, right? Because being a developer and being a builder, one of the issues that we have right now is land costs going up. The other issue that we have is building materials going up, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you really make those homes affordable when you have all these other barriers, right, which is land costs going up and you got building materials going up? But I'm starting to have different partners like LISC, right? Different community banks, right? You know, different investors. One of my great investors, Mr. McCall, who I cherish dearly, introduced me to an investor who is going to give, you know, my company a grant to do my first diverse price point community, right? So to make sure that we can really go out here and develop these communities, right? And not talk about it, but actually do it.
Actually do it, right?
Because there's a lot of talk when it comes to affordable housing and doing these kind of things, but actually being intentional and doing it. So what's next, man, is to continue to grow our business, right? To continue to grow our ministry, and to really be that true developer going out here that's truly helping their people who look like them to be in these communities and to help bridge this gap.
Man, let me tell you something. I'm very proud of you, man. I really am. I'm very, very proud of you hearing the context. I've always seen and heard from a distance, but to hear you and just watching you on the screen, you can tell it's in your heart. Mm. I'm going to do something with you that I've done with pretty much all of my guests. Mm. And I'm going to ask you to just try to speak to the audience, primarily young people, young adults. They might listen to this today and say, wow, you know what? That brother just inspired me. But I'm going to ask you to, from a pastoral perspective, what words could you share about tying this all together? The faith, the hard work in school, getting prepared, understanding what your why is, right? From a pastoral perspective, what words would you be able to share with us or share with them?
Man, so I will tell you this. I mean, faith is huge. And I don't know if you ever had anybody come on the podcast to say this, but I mean, tithing is huge, bro. When I tell you that changed my life as an entrepreneur, and I honestly, I mean, if I'm going to speak to any entrepreneur, you have to give God his 10. You have to give God his 10 because he commanded that, right? You need to be obedient about that. I've seen what it's done for me, right? And when I tell you, Gerald, like, that is so important, and that's something I live by, right, is giving God that 10th, right? And I'm at a point now where I'm giving him 12% versus 10%. I've seen, and I don't do it just because, right? I do it because that's what he said to do, right? Yeah. In Malachi, he talked about it in Malachi, but and I've seen what it has done for me and my family, bro. Like, and it's not just to say, ooh, here's more. I never forget in 2008, I had the 30 rental properties, Gerald. I had the 35 unit apartment building, and I had the 163 unit apartment building with those brothers from Morehouse. And in 2000, from 2008 to 2014, I'm seeing foreclosures everywhere, brother, everywhere. And it was hard in 2008 to 2014, but I kept tithing, right? And guess how many houses I foreclosed on in 2000, from 2008 to now?
I have no idea.
Zero, bro. No. Like, that was God's glory, bro. That was him, like, so, you know, it's the faith, it's giving God his tithe, right? Giving God his glory, right? Everything I do, I never take credit for it, right? I give God the glory in everything I do, and I definitely encourage any entrepreneur to do that. You know, to keep the faith, to give God the glory, to stay in line in his will, right? Anything I do, I said, God, let this be your will, not my will, but your will, right? Because I've been outside of his will before, and I know what that feels like.
It's not good.
It's not good. And I never want to do that again. So, I mean, that's what I would talk. I would talk about faith. I would talk about tithing. And I would talk about staying in line in his will.
Yeah. Well, my brother, believe it or not, we're close to an hour. I told you.
Wow.
I told you. It doesn't feel that way, does it?
No, not at
all.
It
doesn't. Well, I want to leave the last several minutes to you. And is there something you want to share with this audience that I've not gotten around to ask a question? Something that's on your heart? You know, you're a dad now, dad, and I see you out there coaching soccer, and you got to do the traveling now. Been there, done that, but you're absolutely right. Your children take over your life, which is a good thing. But on the other side, you see. So you have a lot going on, but is there anything that you want to share that we didn't cover during this time we've spent today?
No, I think one of the things, I mean, I kind of hit on everything that's near and dear to me, right? And anything that I typically try to make sure that I invest in a young brother or a young sister. Right. But, you know, the biggest thing that I would say is that always give back, right. Always reach back. Right. And then one thing that I will tell you that we don't do enough of in the Black community is to work with each other. So, you know, let's not be crabs in a bucket, right. When God truly blesses you and advances you, right, and whatever that is, right, make sure that you share the knowledge, make sure you share the resources, make sure you share the contacts, and work together. I mean, because we can do so much more together, and I'm truly learning that, like, you know, if we just help each other, if we grow together, if we build together, if we teach together, if we learn together and share together, we can do so much more together. So, I mean, you know, that's something that I do feel like needs to be changed in the African-American community. And I would love to be able to see more on. And I'm currently now working with several brothers, and we all trying to be very, very, very intentional about doing this and not just talking about it, but truly doing it. And like I said, and when God does take you to that next level, make sure you reach back. Because we got to keep doing that, right? We got to keep doing that.
Man, listen, this was an hour well spent. And as I'm sitting here listening to you, I was saying to myself, wow, I have to invite James down to campus.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to invite James down to campus. You know, we have 70,000 students here at UCF. Where I currently
that big?
Work. Yeah, 70,000. And there are some very, very bright people here, young people that are just hungry for what you just shared today. And I can tell you, man, this is one of these episodes that I know I'm going to get phone calls on. I'm going to get phone calls and say, hey, listen, that brother you have on. And it's not anything deep, you know, like you said, we have to be intentional. And just the authenticity of the guests. And today, my brother, you exhibited that yet again. And I just want to say to you, keep doing what you're doing. I watch from a distance. I know you were probably surprised when I called you, but
I was very surprised.
Yeah. I'm watching from a distance. I check people out and I see what you're doing. But, you know, just like you said, before we were talking about off air, I'm an accountant and a finance professional. And here I am doing a podcast.
Wow.
And up to 70, almost 70 plus episodes of just interviewing interesting people like yourself. And the whole idea is, like you said, to bridge that gap, right? And it's brothers like you that continue to, you know, give me the fuel to keep finding the time to do this. And so well done. And I'm just so humble and grateful that you decided to join and share your wisdom.
Honored to be here, brother.
Yeah, share your testimony more so today, because, you know, our nation right now is just in a spot. And that's one spot over there. And then we have another spot with economic and socioeconomic patterns and what people are going through. So for you to share what you shared today, my brother, very, very inspirational. I couldn't be any more grateful and thankful for you joining.
Thank you so much, Gerald. I appreciate you more than you know, brother.
All right. You know what? Let's stay in touch and we'll try to do some things, right?
Let's do it, brother.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My guest this week was Mr. James Sprugs. And I tell you what, I've known this brother for some many years now. And quite frankly, every time I get a guest on, I learn more and more about him. Their level of gravitas and their inspiration in my head and in my heart goes to another level. A deep brother, as you can definitely hear here, but a passionate brother about family and about getting others to come along, which is what I like. Giving back, paying it forward, whatever you put behind it. We just spent an hour with Mr. Sprugs. So ladies and gentlemen, remember, this is It's Easy Sung, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. Until next week, be safe and have a great week. Take care.